You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York, 40% alcohol by volume, drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host here, and we'll be talking about cider, making cider, fruit regions in Europe with some good friends. We're going to go around the room and everyone's going to introduce themselves. Remember, don't forget, we're on heritageradionetwork.org. So, Tom.
Hello, Jimmy. This is Tom Oliver from Oliver's Cider and Perry in Oakham Pitchard in Herefordshire, and it's great to be talking to you again.
That's great, man. You're a legend. And Martin?
Hello. Yes. Well, I'm a cider maker in the second best region in the UK, down in Somerset.
Yeah. And what's your name? And what's the name of your cider?
I'm from Pilton Cider.
And you're Martin Berkeley?
Yes.
Okay. And Vitaly?
My name is Vitaly. I'm from Ukraine. I'm a cider and meat maker from Kyiv, and my cidery have name Berryland.
Berryland. And we started talking to Vitaly on Facebook. Some of you may know that his cidery Berryland was destroyed in Ukraine by some bombs. But we got together with Tom and Martin, and there's a lot we have in common to talk about. But Tom, let's just get started with you. So we're catching up. Bristol Cider Salon, you had Vitaly there last year, inspired by our Franklin County Cider Days in Massachusetts.
Very much so. After being invited over to Franklin County a number of times, what really inspired me was the reception that ciders got in the salons that they ran usually in a big tent on a recreation ground somewhere. And it was just, for a maker, it's just really inspiring when you get all the local people coming and they really get into the whole flavor of the event, which is you don't have very long to stop with each cider maker to taste their cider. And so it's like a sort of cider speed dating affair. and everyone's, really intent. They can ask a quick question or so, but in order to get around them all, they just have to take a sip and then go on. But it really builds up the understanding of cider and how much variety there is. And the great excitement is, of course, they can always come the next year and try more. So I love this thing. And Martin Barkley and me, then we got together back in Bristol and we really wanted to put on an event with a similar flavor. And our focus was going to be the 750ml sharing bottle and all the progress and innovation that's happened in cider in the UK over recent years. So I went back to Franklin Counties and asked the committee for their blessing to use the name, which they generously did. And indeed, most of them have been over to visit us since then as well. And we're up and running. And I suppose Martin is well placed to tell you all about what we're doing this year.
That's great. Hey, Martin.
Hello. Hi. I'd never actually been to the Franklin Counties event, but Tom's often talked about how fantastic it is. It's worked really well in the UK, whereas perhaps we've had quite a few makers doing interesting things, but tending perhaps to do it all by themselves. So this was one of the first times when the small producers who are making our style of cider actually got together in the same venue. to put on an event, which was really inspiring for the producers to find out that they weren't alone making cider in their cold, dark barns by themselves. And there was lots of other people out there, and to have that excitement that Tom talks about of having too many ciders to taste and not quite enough time to taste them all is a great way to showcase what we can do.
That's great. And I know a little bit about Tom, but for you, Martin, what's Pilton, and you know, how long have you been doing it? And it's, you know, it represents the region that you're in.
Yeah, very, very much so. So we're a little bit different from Tom in that we don't have our own orchards, but we're very lucky that there are lots and lots of old orchards. There's a long history of cider growing in our region in the southwest of England, in Somerset, where we are. So we're able to get lots of fantastic classic cider varieties from these old orchards, which works very well with our method of cider making that we specialize in, which is something called keeving, and that's all about trying to make a partially fermented cider, so it still has some natural sweetness. That works well in our region.
That's great, and we'll talk more about cider making techniques a little further in the show. Vitaly, just a little bit about what you were doing at Berryland, you know, what you were making. I see you've made meads as well as ciders and beers.
Yeah, I produced some cider and some co-fermenting cider, like a cider with a cherry, cider with rhubarb, cider with a grape, some variety of the local Ukrainian grape, and I'm producing a sparkling bottle fermenting mead, dry one, not a sweet, and a little bit same like a sparkling wine, and make some experiment with sour beer. But sour beer, it's not so commercial position in our cidery. And main product in our cidery has been a cider and berry, and some other varieties, some different type of this position. Usually, I don't use sulfite. I make a lot of wild fermentation and co-fermenting, maturation together apple and fruit, and apple juice and honeycombs like this, make a sidromel. And for this way, we have a big line of our product, because that part of Ukraine have been very rich of some variety of berries, some variety of wild and cultural fruit. And I have been very happy to work in this place.
Yeah, that's great, Vitaly. Tom, so just about Berryland, so you had him at the Bristol event last year?
Yes, we did. We were very pleased to welcome him, and with all his really for people used to English and UK cider, what Vitaly is doing is quite different, and it has a real point of difference when you come to taste it. And so we find this really exciting. People come in, really do get to taste ciders that are just not available in the UK, and I think it's desperately sad the situation that Vital is in at the moment. And I know that the American Cider Association has done a lot to promote the situation, in the sense that let people know about the trials and tribulations he's going through. They've done some fundraising and everything, and I think there's going to be a little bit of fundraising in the UK too, in a small way, just to show him that, you know, we are thinking about him, we're aware of the problems that he's had, and we just hope that sooner rather than later he can get back to making those wonderful ciders and meads, etc., that he's just been talking about.
Yeah, I just saw in the Guardian that a Ukrainian winery won a top medal at the Decanter Awards. And when I was reading about it, it said that since in 2014 that there was, you know, a lot of changes in Ukraine, and that several makers of consumer goods were motivated because I guess they weren't able to import, or the currency exchange wasn't so good. And I think the question I have, it's also for Tom and Martin, is that what impact can craft beverages, regional agricultural-based beverages have on a small region or country in terms of like economic development and, you know, identity? Because we're talking about a Ukrainian winery winning a Decanter Award. We're talking about Berryland, you know, being in festivals in Spain and England. And even for you guys in Herefordshire and Somerset, you know, you've got identities based on some of these drinks. You want to set, is anything stimulating for you, Tom?
Jimmy, there's always a lot that's stimulating for me. I think this is for me one of the keys about cider. It is a drink rooted in the apple, and the apple is grown in many, many parts of the world, and it provides a real commonality for everybody. So from that, people love to travel, they love to taste, as you say, the local food and drink. And I'm going to suggest that the amount of tourism and visitor time spent just between cider makers alone is phenomenal. So as makers, we definitely travel the world, tasting cider, visiting people. And, you know, we've got, again, more guest cider makers coming this year and from the States. We've got the wonderful Christine Walter from Bowman's. We've got Scott Katzmer from the Seattle Cider Company. And Chris Kazak, who's representing Eden Cider. So this is great that people and their ciders will travel to different countries so that people can taste what they're doing and taste the taste of the region that they come from. I just find it really exciting. And
for you, Tom, you know, Herefordshire, I mean, you know, Oliver Cider, many of us have had, but if you haven't, you know, what is Herefordshire Cider and Perry?
Okay, so it really, in a nutshell, if we're talking about the cider apples that we've been growing here for the last couple of hundred years, we're rooted in tannic cider. So these are apples grown specifically for making cider. They have acidity for the most part. They have some sweetness, but what they mostly have is tannins. And these tannins are phenolic compounds. They contribute to astringency and bitterness. But they're really responsible too for mouthfeel and for the length of the drink. And the impression that it leaves a lot of people with is a bit of dryness and maybe some sourness. When that's combined with the right acidity and the right sweetness, then you get a drink that, you know, obviously we think is the most excellent of ciders. And we continue to try and persuade people everywhere that this is the case.
Great. And then Martin, for you, tell us about Keeving, you know, why you do it. Is it something unique to your region or to your cider making?
Yes, I guess, it isn't a particular at all at the moment to our region. There's not many people who use this method in the UK, but it is pretty widespread in northern France. So a typical French cider would be made by this method of keeving. When we naively started making cider, which was all because of this great volume of cider orchards that there are in the area, and it just seems so sad to see the fruit going to waste, such great quality. So we started making cider, and my wife had been brought up in France, so she was very keen to try for me to make this keeved method cider. So that was basically how we got into it. But it makes a special different type of sweetness, because the sweetness has come from the apple, so fructose sweetness rather than a sucrose sugar sweetness. So it definitely gives a different mouthfeel and a different taste. So we were making cider for quite a while by ourselves and selling it locally as a local product. But it wasn't until I went traveling, particularly to the US, to look back and see how British cider is perceived from other countries in the world that I realized really what a really special product we had, which perhaps isn't valued as much as it should be locally. And it's only when you look at it from further afield that you see the true quality. So it was great to do events like Cider Salon, where you have that mixture of different producers coming from around the world, and again to give more confidence to our local producers that we really do have some fantastic apples to work with.
So it sounds like your Somerset's very interesting region. You have toast and Somerset cheddar for breakfast often.
indeed, yes. Well, we get a fair amount of rain, so the grass grows well, which makes lots of good cheese, and helps the apples grow as well, to grow good orchards.
Yeah, Vitaly, tell us more about your region before the war. You know what. You grew berries, you made meads. Tell us just about some of the other ingredients that are grown around you and some of the foods that you would pair with your drinks. Give us a little local color.
You see, we use about 11 different variety of the apple and 4 different variety of the peel. And some wild pear from wild forest pear, and we have a good pairing with the local village cheese and bread and cheese. I think it's better to do it with our beverages, and usually meat or fruit wine with honey or fruit meat have a very rich history in Ukraine, because maybe about more or less like 1,000 years people in Ukraine make meat and make a local beverages call it peri kvass. Peri kvass is little bit different like a peri, because in peri for everyone use juice of the peel, and peri kvass make in a different way, and some peas got it in the water. And this water with a peri fermenting and finally have maybe just maybe 3 ABV, like 2.5 ABV, very freshly and very historical things. And a lot of people in the countryside of Ukraine make like a cherry meat or cherry wine with honey. It's the same way, or two sides of one medal. Call it vishnyak. This is cherry juice fermenting with honey or sometimes with sugar, but I prefer honey. And not so big ABV. Start from 6 up to 10, 11, like this. And these beverages have a very rich history in Ukrainian countryside. And we're representing our beverages in a very and absolutely different restaurant in Ukraine.
Okay. Tom, let's go back to talking about techniques. So I noticed that Vitaly has saw some pictures of terracotta. I was curious about, he might be fermenting in terracotta. Martin talks about kieving. You know, at something like the Bristol Cider Salon, is there a wide range of techniques that the cider makers are using that you see, or is it there more similar techniques?
There is a wide range of techniques, but I think a lot of it in terms of the newer cider makers arriving on the scene all seem to in one form or another, rely on multiple racking. So that's the either pumping or gravity drop in, letting clarifying the juice, reducing, I think, the nutrient and the yeast load in the juice, slowing the fermentation up, and then letting it almost go to sort of dry maybe, and then bottling it and letting it just condition very slightly in the bottle. That's a very popular way of making cider at the moment, especially among new advocates for cider, because it's a relatively straightforward, achievable way of getting a good product. But, you know, Martin's Keeving, a lot of people are using modern techniques, you know, using filtration, enzymes, yeasts, and all that. You know, cider's a big tent. There's lots of ways to do it. And, you know, I think the real criteria that we're after is the cider's got to taste good. That's first and foremost the important thing. You know, we really want people to be able to understand what cider can be and how it tastes its best. And we also obviously make a great attempt at proving to people the way it matches with food and pairs with food well. So we put on a feast on the Friday night before the salon on the Saturday, and that matches 8 or 9 ciders or perries with different meals, as it different courses. And we're also doing lots of fringe events where people can talk more about the specialist side of things, the way they make cider as individuals. So the techniques are, you know, important to make good cider, but really what we're after is people championing great tasting cider in 750ml bottles.
Yeah. You know, you had posted on Instagram a photo from 2008, and I'm curious about just how much the UK cider scene's evolved, because in 2008 you said, let's try something new, single varietal ciders and perries, still not carbonated, in wine bottles with an informative label and pair with food. Now, was that revolutionary in 2008?
No, I've never been revolutionary, Jimmy. I've never had a unique idea ever. I'm a proper magpie, and I'll steal ideas from wherever I can, and then try and turn them into a cider facing thing. It's just that every time when people find cider for the first time, they all say, oh, you know what, it'd be great if you did this, it'd be great if you did that. And in reality, there is nothing new under the sun. Most things have been done in some shape or form before. It's just that when you arrive on the scene, when you taste things, everybody's as a producer is at a different stage of their journey. And this is what I find so exciting and why people should be more open-minded about cider in general. Because depending on when you've come to the party, then that's what your experience of cider is. And you may well be talking to somebody who's already done twice the things that you're recommending to people or suggesting to people to do. And I think this is a great thing about something with the traditions and the length of time that cider has. It's always open to being creative and taking it forward. And I do think cider's developing all the time, but it's always a slightly tongue-in-cheek reinventing the wheel a little bit, I think.
Yeah. And Martin, back to Keeving. So if you're saying it sounded like radical to me, but when you mentioned Northern French style, I think of like DuPont. That's the style that you're talking about?
Yes. Yes, indeed. But it is, as Tom says, just one of many different methods. And it's, I guess what's also interesting in somewhere like the Salon is the commonality of the approach that the different producers have. So everyone's very keen to be working with the apple as naturally as possible. So low intervention, which interestingly has become more in focus with the rise of natural wine. So there's probably a much more better alignment with wine and winemaking techniques than perhaps with craft beer, which was maybe more of interest a few years ago. that has moved on in the connections with that insider, and now people are more talking about their pet nats and that type of thing. So using more winemaking techniques.
Yeah, and were these techniques already existing in UK cider making? And is this more of a way to tap into marketing by connecting with natural wine?
I think, yes, definitely. Well, they, as Tom says, these techniques have been around and they just keep going around, and people get excited when they rediscover them, which then links into the marketing. I think I've heard it said that if you're selling a cider that's been fermented a little bit in the bottle, if you're selling it to craft beer people, then you might call it bottle conditioned. Whereas if you're selling it to natural wine people, then it's a pet nat. So that's all the marketing. I think that was one of Tom's explanations. Stolen there, you see, like a good magpie, I steal all Tom's best ideas.
I'd been to one of the raw wine fests in New York a couple of years ago, and I met some third generation Italian winemakers, and I remember they said, "Yeah, we're basically making the way that our grandparents used to make it now," and it I don't know, that made sense to me.
Yeah.
I think it does. And also, Jimmy, I mean, it's also, I think, full kudos to the world of wine in that they have continuously for hundreds of years dominated the PR in terms of drinks and certainly fruit fermented drinks. So that you're left with the impression that the only decent drink to have with food is wine, and the reality is that cider really has stolen a march on them in terms of techniques and everything. Because if you read James Crowd's recent book Cider Country, it becomes very clear that the way that champagne came about was through the use of strong glass corks and techniques and production of glass that was championed in the UK and forced on them by the change from wood to coal to fire the furnaces. And yet when you read literature and everything, you'd think that that champagne itself had discovered this technique, and it's actually not quite true. But unfortunately the cider PR doesn't quite carry the dollars and the pounds that wine does.
And the history and the snob appeal as well. But what's nice about your event, and whenever I think of Herefordshire cider, I think of, you know, top world class fine beverage that I will drink anytime. And if you next time you come to New York, please, I will drink anytime. So I just want to go back to Vitaly again. Because I know there's a lot going on, but I'm still very interested. I saw that you had been at a festival in Catalonia in Spain and Barcelona Beer Fest. I think we want to talk more about traveling with your cider and meads and the reception you were getting. I might have lost him, but Tom, maybe you can just speak for Vitaly. Just a little more about the reception that he was getting with his products again.
Certainly Martin and me last year at the Salon, I think the one producer that everybody said they'd been excited by being able to try the ciders, etc., that he bought was Berryland, because it is such a unique offering. His story is so good. And he has a real sense of what the different fruits can bring to a drink. He works with honey, which I am in incredible awe of, because I find honey an impossible thing to work with. And the way that he produces these drinks is fantastic. And I think the opportunities that he's getting now, and I think Martin's right here, this is the world of natural wine has really opened up the opportunities for producers like Berryland. And, you know, you've got the lads from Fruct Stereo over in Scandinavia. You know, that everyone's making drinks that have a real cutting edge appeal to, you know, the new cider drinkers in the world.
Yeah, and just before we take a break, I want to read a quote from the Decanter magazine, the Guardian article about Decanter, the winery in Ukraine winning an award. This is a little backstory, and I feel like it's probably relevant to Vitaly and Berryland. It said, the number of small wine producers in Ukraine started to grow after Russia's first intervention in 2014. In early 2015, Ukraine's currency devalued by two-thirds, making imported goods expensive and prompting a burst of Ukraine-made consumer goods such as clothes, food, furniture, and wine and drinks. So that was very interesting, and I hope we can talk a little more with Vitaly from Berryland, but I know that there are ways to support them, and we can talk about that after the break. So we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
I'm Chava Perivan, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainability-managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio, and we're one of the many podcasts on Heritage Radio Network. Support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. And a big shout out to Berryland, the Ukraine cider maker and mead maker of Italy. He was on our first side of the show. There's ways to support them. Their cidery was destroyed in Ukraine earlier this year, but look up Berryland in Ukraine, and I'm sure there's ways to support. So we got Tom and Martin here talking about the Bristol Cider Salon, which Berryland had been at last year. Well, Tom, you've also gone into retail. Let's hear about what's exciting in cider. You know, in New York City, there hasn't really quite been a cider bar or cider outpost that's stuck so far.
Jimmy, this is the real challenge. This is obviously what we want to see happen with cider, because if cider is going to make any real, you know, real progress, we've got to have dedicated bars. It's fantastic. I understand why pubs, etc., have a range of drinks, but we need a dedicated cider venue. And in reality, there's been one for 23 years in Borough Market, and New Forest Cider, started by Barry Topp and now run by his daughter Mary, is a fantastic sort of outpost for traditional cider and for other UK cider. But coming out of COVID, Mary was really keen to just try and broaden the appeal and take it up a notch. So we developed a partnership, and so it's Mary Topp and New Forest Cider. It's Tom Oliver and Oliver Cider and Perry. And then we've got the Felix Nash from a Fine Cider Company, who's London's most, well, first cider merchant for many, many years, probably 50 years, possibly 100, I don't know. So he's come in. And also we've got Ted Duane, who's the cider maker at Two Orchards, and his day job is bass player with Mumford & Sons. So we've got four people who are passionate about cider and involved. And we've got this stand in Borough Market. We've refurbished it in the last couple of weeks. So it looks really bright and inviting. We're doing cider by the glass in the back bar or in the Palace of Cider. And this is going to be featuring different ciders and perries. Every 2 or 3 weeks we'll be changing over and giving everyone a chance to try them. And in the front bar, we do a lot of mulled cider in the winter and takeaways and so forth. So it's a totally cider-based space run by people who love cider and who want to really allow people to experience how good cider can be. It's in Borough Market, the epicenter of food and drink in London. It's where everyone who's coming to London goes to try different foods and drinks. It's a fantastic place. There's a huge variety of food and drink there. So it is the right place to be. We're really excited. The reception to the venture has been really, really good. I'd just like to get a quick plug in, as you know, I'm very keen to do this. And on July the 4th, at the London Cider House in Borough Market, we'll be doing a July the 4th celebration. And funnily enough, we're going to be featuring the three cider makers I've already mentioned. So we'll get Christine Walter from Bowman Cider with some of their fantastic prize-winning cider. That she has won the medium-sized cidery of the USA at Glencap, and Scott Katzmer from Seattle Cider Company, who won the large cidery. He'll be there as well with ciders. And finally, Chris Kazak, as I say, representing Eden Cider, and Eleanor, who's been a massive supporter of the Bristol Cider Salon. She's been over a couple of times with her husband, Albert. And this time Chris is coming over. So we've got this opportunity to showcase cider from around the world in one of the busiest markets in London. And we're going to make it work, Jimmy.
That's great. So I understand the appeal of a cider salon and the opportunity to taste many ciders and expand the awareness and, you know, open to consumers and industry people. But like for a shop, retail, and what are some strategies that you're going to do to make a cider bar work? Is it going to be more posh? Is it going to be rustic? Are you focusing on tourism? You know, we always see people going to the Basque region or Asturias, and you know, they've got some meat grilling and there's a high pour. Why would I go to London Cider House, and, you know, would I be spending all day there? You know, what type of experience is it?
Well, Jimmy, I know you have a fine capacity for enjoyment, but if you did spend all day there, you would have to drink slowly. It would be no good going too quickly at it. What we're going to try and do is champion the best and champion the variety. We are obviously UK focused in terms of the ciders that we'll be having, but we are stocking ciders from around the world. That is actually not quite so straightforward with the cost of importing cider into the UK as it might sound, but we will do our best. I think the way that we think we're doing it differently to everywhere else, this is not a new thing, but we're doing cider by the glass. So we have a range of ciders, bottled ciders, available every day to have and enjoy by the glass, so that you can try a 125 ml sample of a 750 ml bottle. And if you like it, you can drink more. If you really like it, you can buy a bottle and take it home with you. The other opportunity you have is while you're there, you can order on an iPad and it'll be delivered to your house. So we're trying to make it easier to buy cider so that you don't have to carry it around the market all the time. You can order it and it will be delivered. The buy the glass is something that means suddenly every bottled cider that we have in stock will over time be available to be sampled and to be drunk. We also have a number, I think it's seven lines. So two keg lines and five bag-in-box lines for draft ciders. So these are a continually rotating draft cider. So I think what we're going to do is we are going to showcase a big range of really good ciders and perries focused on the UK. It's not anything dramatically new, but I will say that I think the surroundings are bright, inclusive. We've got fantastic staff, Romain and James and the rest of the team. They're all taking on board what we're trying to do. They're upgrading their skills and their knowledge base of the ciders that they're serving. They're really keen to share what they know about cider with people. And I think for us, this is the crucial thing, that the people serving them will be keen for people to enjoy the ciders, but find out as much as they can. We'll be doing menus, which will give you more information on cider, etc. We've got a lot of things planned. We've got events planned, etc. We're hitting the ground running, but we're hoping that we're going to be able to listen to what people say and just make it a great experience for going along, drinking a cider, and then hopefully buying more.
I'm already sold. I mean, Borough Market, premier place for food and markets in London and cider. But Martin, tell us about the experience of your operation. Can we go? Is there a tasting room? How are you selling cider, and what's the experience for consumers?
Well, we don't do too much of that. Ourselves, so we're concentrating really on wholesale, on supplying fantastic places like Felix Nash in London. And what I think is really exciting about the cider house, London Cider House, is that it's driven by cider producers. So actually having Tom directly involved in the running of the location is something really different. So there are lots of places where you can buy cider in London, but they're very much based upon what the venue's idea and approach to cider is. So this is ran the other way, in that it's being driven by the producers, by someone like Tom, who has his ear to the ground as to what's happening in the industry. So that's a great opportunity to go there and to get that experience, which is really unique in London, and very exciting for us other producers who don't have to directly get involved, but who can benefit from the word being spread up in the city. But no, so we do have visitors who come and track us down, but we're in a small town in Somerset, so it's much better for us to work hard making nice ciders and send them off to where the people are. But particularly in Bristol, I guess, is our nearest big city, where there's a growing demand, a nice natural wine cider scene, and a strong heritage for cider. So those two things together are great for us. But so we very much take cider to the people rather than relying on them coming to us.
Oh yeah, and Martin, in your note, you said a fun topic for discussion would be collaborating with your competitors.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying there is when we first started, we spent a long time, I guess, like the rest of the cider industry, in quite simplistic marketing, like a lot of people do, just trying to say, we make the best cider, drink ours, don't go with our competitors. And it wasn't until I saw a big commercial cider maker who was written on the side of a bus, this buy our cider, this is what cider's meant to taste like. And I was thinking, well, that's great. That's what big cider is saying. But us small producers are not actually saying anything at all. We're sitting back and waiting for people to come to us. So then Tom and I started talking, and it was when we realized that actually if we work together, and we could promote this great exciting movement that there is in the more natural cider making styles, that collaborating with your competitors is definitely the way forward, and we haven't looked back since then, really.
Well, you're more alike than different.
Indeed.
You know, and you have such a small market share compared to the big guys. You know, thinking again about the London Cider House, Tom, it really does seem that your cider salon and the London Cider House are sharing the same like ethos. When I go to the Cider Salon the Bristol Cider Salon website, it says, "Welcome to the world of specialty bottled cider, discovered method traditional, Keeving, Perry, ice and beer cider hybrids."
We do. I think the reason being that we're all championing, I'll use this term very loosely, the craft element of cider making, and we're strongly linking cider making with apples and orchards and the whole seasonal approach to the way that cider is based. We're talking apple varieties are important. We're talking balance. We're talking technique. And all things that are of interest to people that want to get in deeper. But ultimately, what we're all trying to do is just make great cider. You want to crack a bottle open at the end of a day's hard work, or you've got friends coming around for food, or you just had a celebration, you've had your first child, you've got, I don't know, you've just won a good contract, whatever it is. We just want people to be enjoying cider and for it to be a real social lubricant. It always used to be the country social lubricant. It still is in a lot of places. It's such a great drink that people just need to be able to find it. And I'm hoping that both the salon and the London Cider House are doing just that. They're making it more available. A lot of the producers that we feature are all small. We don't have any main routes to market or anything. So the more opportunity that smaller places can champion these smaller producers, the better off the consumer and the drink is going to be.
Wow. That's really exciting. Another thing I want to know is just some great anecdotes from both of you. First, what you're drinking. You know, tell me a cider that you're drinking that I should seek out in the UK. And you know, perhaps like a interesting anecdote from your long career in the industry.
Okay, so I'm drinking a Wilding cider. Wilding are a fantastic couple, their son Alf, and they are in Somerset, and Sam Leach and Becky have made a wonderful start to cider, and the drink I have got is a Rural Method Yarlington Mill and Dabinet cider, big earthy tones, lovely tannic structure, nice residual sweetness. Really, really drinkable and scrumptious. The thing I really want to know, Jimmy, and the thing that is really exciting me. As much as I love the Cider Salon and I love the London Cider House, what excites me most at the moment is, what is Mr. Ryan Burke going to do next? He's left Angry Orchard and the world is his oyster. I think he's a phenomenal cider maker. I think he has a wonderful view of food and drink. And I am so excited to see what he starts doing and where he starts doing it, because I think we're all in for a massive treat.
Yeah, no, he did some amazing. I mean, not maybe all our listeners know that Angry Orchard, you guys know in the States, Angry Orchard has a more mass-produced cider product. But for how many years? Over 5 years, Ryan Burke's been making at the Angry Orchard, like, innovation cider place, the Orchard in Walden, New York. And he seems like every year he won the best cider in New York. What else can you say about Ryan and what he brought to the American cider scene, Tom? Because
what he bought was,
because maybe our listeners don't know who he is. So
yeah, what Ryan bought was a massive enthusiasm for cider and what it could be, and an overwhelming desire to learn what apples did what. And he started with Greg Hall at Virtue Cider in Michigan, and cut his teeth there, and then was headhunted, I think, and moved to Angry Orchard, and they built this fabulous cidery on an orchard in Walden, as you say, and this allowed Ryan to try all these ideas, all these different approaches to cider that you could do to be able to get down and work at them, develop process, develop apples and everything. And I think the thing that it needs to be borne in mind, that there are so many people who got into cider or were made more aware of the world of cider through what Ryan and Angry Orchard did in terms of taking people around the world. They took groups of people to the UK multiple times. They went to Spain. They've been to France. They've introduced cider and cider making to cider makers in the US, and they really have supported Glyndwr and lots of organizations. So I think they've really serviced the industry in a way that is unusual for big cider to be helping and to be illustrating small cider. Many people will argue that there's reasons for that, and of course there's reasons for that. But I think the result is cider itself is a lot better placed, and a lot of cider makers are a lot better placed because of what they've done. And this was all under he instilled this approach in Angry Orchard. But I think it's time now for him to let loose. I want to see what he's going to do. What he comes up with, just tasting through ciders with him is for me one of the most enjoyable things you can do, and the way that you taste and the way that you consider blends and the way that you consider how best you can show off the apple is not something that everybody's particularly brilliant at or capable. So this is exciting.
Yeah, and then flashbacks. I feel like that even when I'm talking to you, both of you, we're still so far ahead of most consumers, and I think people are just really open to trying more ciders. Greg Hall and you made a Gold Rush cider. I don't know how many years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago. Tell us about that. And is that cider still have a Is there a place for that? Whatever, tell us what that cider was, and is there a place for it in the market? Like, I think it would do well in the States.
Yeah, this binds together a whole lot of things we've been talking about, really. So when Greg and Ryan visited, and I it was over 10 years ago that they came to see me. We talked wide-rangingly about cider, and obviously that Greg had come from Goose Island, And we were just talking about collaborating and what was feasible. And obviously, moving cider across the Atlantic is feasible, but it's not really cost effective, especially at the moment. So what we decided to do was make a cider in the UK that exhibited all the wonderful possibilities that you get from using tannic cider apples. But what we were going to do was do a nod towards Belgium lambic cider as well. And so the first few gold rushes were re-fermented with a lambic yeast, and in a way to appeal to beer drinkers. We weren't making beer, but we wanted a message or an idea that would appeal to them. And so Gold Rush was a homage to the influence of tannic cider apples and Belgian wild fermentations. And over time, and we've done, Ryan and me just did the ninth iteration of Gold Rush last year, and it's morphed into a celebration, really, of just wild fermentation and tannic cider apples in a way. We hope that as people get more familiar with cider, it gets to be almost more easy drinking. I still think it's a big challenging drink for someone coming to cider for the first time, but over time, and as people get to drink more cider, they will find an element of comfort with the texture of it, the mouthfeel of it. It's not for somebody who doesn't want to be challenged, but at the same time, I'm going to advocate that it's a really well-made, balanced drink. And so if you're into well-made, balanced drinks with character, Gold Rush is a drink for you.
All right. And now last with Martin, what are you drinking, Martin? Do you want to mention one of your ciders, or do you want to give a shout out to another colleague?
Well, I guess maybe sort of just summarizing a lot of things we've been talking about today. I'm actually drinking one of Tom's ciders, but it's a little bottle of his Yarlington Mill cider that I've had in my sort of personal stash. It's from season 2015. And I've sort of kept it back from an event that we held probably 20, you know, a few years after that. I can't remember the exact year, but and it was around the Bath and West show, which is a great event in Somerset, where they hold a big cider competition, the British Cider Championship. And it was one of the inspirational events for me, because lots of people from around the world, lots of other producers come over to that event. They enter ciders in the competition. So I put on a cider share, bottle share event at my cidery, which just happens to be very close to where the competition is. And Ryan Burks came to that, and Tom came, and everybody brought a few bottles. So it's kind of nice to be drinking that and thinking back to those inspirational times when all the different producers came from all over the world to inspire each other and drink good cider together.
Wow. Well, guys, I just want to thank you for joining me. We did shed a little light on Europe, UK, and Ukraine cider and mead. Check out, if you can, Oliver Cider and its Pilton Cidery from Somerset. If you ever get a chance, Berryland was in Ukraine. Hopefully they will be back. And that was it, guys. Thanks so much for joining me. Big shout out to Matt Patterson, our engineer, Alex Tran, producing intern. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll catch you next time on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Martin. Have a good
Cheers,
one.
Jimmy.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.